And what a year in politics, both nationally and in Wisconsin, it was. So I'm very grateful that Democratic Senate Leader Jennifer Schilling, who represents the 32nd District, is our first year-end Newsmakers interview.
Well,
Senator,
thank you
for coming in.
Thank you.
Well, should we call it landslide, Jennifer Schilling? Because the recount showed you by what total?
It was a margin of 61 votes out of more than 89,000 cast. So that's...
Wow.
Pretty amazing. I mean, we tell people every vote matters, your vote counts, and through the recount, we saw the integrity of the election, and my thanks go to those clerks and the poll workers and the volunteers who did a fantastic job in on counting those ballots. And it was the election was about 3 weeks longer than we expected in our household, but in Western Wisconsin. But I think that we had my opponent and I. When he called to concede on that Friday, that we commented about really the civil discourse that we have had. That we talked about issues. It was very
yes.
civil, and in this time and era that we find ourselves in, I think people respect that. I mean, particularly some nastiness at the top of the ticket, and you know, mm-hmm. a new kind of sort of. Dialogue that we weren't quite familiar with some name calling and nastiness, that in Western Wisconsin that we really stuck to the issues and
civility
and people appreciate that.
I understand. But let's talk about some of the issues that you just hit on. Why are you and I talking about a president-elect Trump and not a president-elect Clinton right now, Senator?
Well, I think we're still looking at, you know, kind of slicing and dicing the numbers and things like that, but some of the early takeaways that Democrats are looking at that is certainly our base did not come out and vote as we had anticipated they would, so certainly in Milwaukee area, engaging those voters to turn out for Democrats,
right.
Making sure as we look at, everybody's talked about the rural vote as well, and how do we connect with white voters, white men across this state. But there'll be other things that will, I think, kind of come to the forefront. I was proud of the candidates that we recruited in the Senate race, that we had four fantastic candidates that were challengers. And then, of course, with Senator Hansen, Senator Lassa, and myself as the incumbents that were on the ballot. And it's tough to see Senator Lassa go, that she was a good friend and a strong colleague and a great representative of central Wisconsin, a strong voice for families in that district.
What do you think is the problem with your party's message to some of these middle income? And Mr. Trump once said, I love the uneducated. But so we're talking about a message issue, aren't we? Or are we talking about message plus campaign finance money?
Well, I think it's a combination of both. I think there continues to be a lot of anxiety and anger out there amongst voters, that there's a mistrust of government. And we really thought that would be geared towards the majority party, who has been in control of the governor's office and the Senate and the Assembly for, since 2010. And so we really felt that the anger would be geared towards their policies and their presence. And a lot of the voters, I think, were late last minute over the weekend, broke mm-hmm. For Trump. Obviously, we saw that. And so I think it's the agenda that we as Democrats have. We're going to continue to talk about what we need to do for strong public schools in this state, that people identify very strongly with their local community, neighborhood school, and more communities are having to go to referendum to support those local schools. And what do we as a state have as a responsibility to properly funding public schools in this state? It's going to be talking about health care. There's a lot of uncertainty now with the Trump administration and what that means with his own relationship with Congress, but his relationship with the states as well, and the importance of senior care and Badger care, and what uncertainties may be coming with changes to long-term care here in the state, but also income eligibility, guidelines, premiums. You know, there will be a lot of uncertainty for, I think, families who currently are enrolled in these programs.
When the Trump administration, Congressman Ryan, talk about Black granting Medicaid, you're a former member of Finance. What concerns do you have if that major policy shift is made?
Well, some of the concerns would be kind of the idea of a blank check and not knowing quite what some of the guidelines would be that the majority party would put out there on these dollars. Again, going back to some folks who are, you know, disabled, they're elderly, that are enrolled in these programs, and uncertainty is scary to them. And making sure that we protect that they have access to affordable health care, to long-term health insurance. There were some changes that were proposed by Governor Walker, changes to some of the long-term care programs in the state, and the disability rights folks as well as advocates came out very strongly saying we need to make sure that we have certainty for these people who are enrolled in these programs and these families. And so we need to make sure we keep an eye on what this means for people who currently are enrolled in these programs and with, you know, children, with aging parents, and with low-income families that currently are eligible.
And the governor and the insurance commissioner say with the late campaign issue of the premium increase in the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, it proved that Wisconsin was right by not setting up our own exchange. Your response to that, as we begin to look at the future, once the Trump administration repeals and replace, to use their term?
Well, and again, it's going back to that uncertainty and how disruptive this will be in the lives of millions of people in this country who currently receive care through the Affordable Care Act. And there are a lot of things that people find a positive of it, having pre-existing conditions and being covered, being up to the age of 27 years old and being covered, some of the coverage that women receive through the Affordable Care Act. And so, again, that disruption in healthcare services and healthcare coverage can be very scary for people out there. And they have yet to articulate what that plan will be. And they've had years to do that. And the idea of just pulling the rug out from people, now it's time. We need, the election is behind us. It's time to govern. That Republicans have Congress. They have the White House. They have the legislature. They have the governor's office. That they really are in the driver's seat on many of these issues. And we fully intend to hold them accountable for what will happen in this state.
A few years ago, your caucus endorsed in a budget debate a single-payer system for Wisconsin. Is that a good idea, looking forward?
Well, as we look at how we are paying for health insurance, what access to health insurance means for women, for families, for children, it makes sense to make sure that people have these preventative access to health care, and it's on that preventative end. I have for a long time talked about the importance of health and wellness and prevention, and as we look at that Medicaid population, what we can do to help with some of those chronic costs of chronic diseases. So I think that people feel very strongly it'll be difficult to take away health insurance from people who have currently enrolled in it and
those
are using it.
20 million it. People who got it as a result of the Affordable Care Act.
Excuse me.
So, but I don't hear you saying your caucus is going to offer a new single payer system as we realign in the Trump administration era.
Well, as a caucus, we are going to get together and talk about sort of what is our agenda, what are the issues that we care about, and we certainly know that health care is going to be one that will see some significant changes and could be very harmful for people. So as a caucus, to come up with best practices, what we need to be doing to realize efficiencies, to make sure that we are delivering health care in a way that providers are comfortable with and are supportive with, but also, again, looking at even some of the reimbursement, and that's been a long time coming as far as Medicaid or Medicare reimbursement changes.
Let's talk about the ruling by two of the three federal judges that said that the reapportionment maps drawn in 2011 were illegal because of a new concept called the efficiency gap. Here's my question. Pretty soon, parties on both sides are going to say how this illegal map should be fixed. What are your thoughts? Should districts be redrawn before 2018?
Well, certainly, if you were a math major and you looked at the efficiency gap, you'd be excited about what has come forward with those that three-judge panel. And redistricting, I mean, it confirmed what we have known in this state, that gerrymandering of redistricting has definitely helped the Republicans, and that they did it in a very willful and cognizant way of drawing those redistricting lines. And so as we look at what that means going into 2018 and then the redistricting in 2020 and running under those guidelines, we need to make sure that we are drawing lines that are fair, that we support the Iowa Commission, Iowa model, which is a nonpartisan commission to draw those lines, that certainly we have seen those packing in of votes in certain districts in this state, particularly in Milwaukee and Dane County, where there are a great number of Democratic votes. Then we are seeing very few competitive seats around the state, both in the Assembly and in the Senate. The Assembly seats are much smaller, so it's kind of easier to draw those lines in a very weird configuration that really leaves people kind of scratching their heads about how do these lines come into play.
Do you think the line should be redrawn before the 2018 election cycle?
And I know that some of my members would wonder what lines are they running under and what would that district be. But
I think pretty confusing to your members and voters, excuse me.
Well, and we have that after the election, after the lines are drawn in 2020 for the 2022 race election. So I certainly think that we would look at that opportunity to have those lines redrawn. Now, this case is far from over, but obviously we are pleased with the first ruling that the judges have made to talk about and highlight the concerns that they have with the gerrymandering. But as we look at fair, competitive seats that really reflect and the area that they are in, it makes sense to make sure that these really are districts that are not so far swinging to the right or to the left. And we see that the highest, you know, district in one of the states in Milwaukee is like an 85% Democratic seat versus a Republican that maybe has a 65 seat. There are wide swings in that.
That's that gap that the judges identified.
Yep.
The Attorney General said he's going to appeal it. With our 4-4 U.S. Supreme Court, are you hopeful that the federal judge's ruling stands, that these boundaries were drawn improperly, illegally?
Cautiously optimistic, cautiously hopeful on that, but we understand that that, like I said, this is far from over, that this will continue to play out, and I'm sure that the majority party who benefits from these lines and benefits from maintaining power, that they will do everything in their power to prevent that from happening and to continue to drag this out. But certainly looking ahead what those lines should look like to really demonstrate competitive seats around the state. I think that is best for democracy.
Yesterday in your interview with the Associated Press, Scott Bauer, you said Republicans own the transportation funding question. Can you elaborate on that?
Sure. As we talk about upcoming issues, transportation has been one, particularly when I became the Senate Democratic leader 2 years ago, that was an area that I pointed to some bipartisan support, that I wanted to work with the majority party in both houses about what we can do to have a long-term sustainable funding mechanism. The Republicans have been in control since 2010. They've had several budgets to be able to address this and move forward on, and they haven't. And we have seen this past week with hearings in transportation and with the secretary before the hearing, the committee, that the right hand and the far right hand still are in disagreement about what to do. And Senate Democrats stand ready to govern, to be the adult in the room, to talk about a long-term fix, that we can't continue to limp our way through additional future budgets with just borrowing and delaying projects, that is costly on several fronts. It's costly from a material standpoint. It's costly for jobs, that we need to make sure that we are looking at diversifying our funding mechanism for transportation, that this is an economic issue for businesses to get their goods to market. It's affecting tourism. It's affecting families who are commuting to work and they hit a pothole and the cost that it has to repair their car. And I talk to many people, if it's a small business, if it's agriculture, that people who are on the roads see the maintenance that needs to be done. So it's maintaining the roads we have and investing in the roads in Wisconsin as well.
If the Assembly passed a bill, because the Assembly is taking the lead on trying to come up with what they call a long-term transportation funding solution. If they passed a bill that did a little bit of a lot of things, and it provided more financial stability and it raised new money, would your Senate Democrats vote for that?
I think we'd have to take a look at it. And I have always said, again, it's not going to be one answer, that this is not just black and white. There are lots of shades of gray about what we can do. It's not a shortage of ideas that are out there, because Lord knows we've had blue ribbon commissions and task force that have sat down and said these are some of the options on the table. And consistently throughout this election season, Democrats have said everything should be on the table. Let's look at things. Let's look to see what we can do. That's something that is acceptable. We have third party validators that are out there, like the Just Fix It Wisconsin campaign, made up of county and other local officials and labor and road builders who are saying, look at the disrepair that is happening, and we're falling further and further behind. And in the past, Wisconsin had a proud tradition of having superior infrastructure, and people came to Wisconsin and complimented us and applauded us on the condition of our roads, and I don't think we can say that now.
The UW just fell out of the top 5 for research. They fell to number 7. Is that going to be a major campaign issue?
Well, I think that is significant in the underinvestment in our university system. And as people take a look at the Wisconsin higher education, the Wisconsin university system, that we have consistently been near the top in many of those rankings. And to fall from 5 to 7, that is significant. We are seeing more and more faculty being wooed away to other schools, other states that are investing and have a certainty of funding for higher education. We are seeing that the university is asking for $42 million in addition to that $50 million that was lapsed in the last budget, but they're looking and asking for a 2% pay increase for their faculty. And for years, I've been hearing about peer compensation on the campuses that I visit and that I represent. And so I think that is a significant number that has come about as we've dropped from 5 out of 7. And I am hopeful that lawmakers will understand the value and the reputation that this university has and the support that is needed from this state.
We're almost out of time. I want to respect your schedule. Maybe one final question. If you ran for governor, you've mentioned transportation problems, UW funding, public schools. What other major issue, if you ran, would you use as a campaign theme?
Well, if I ran, and that is a big, big if, I am flattered when people have my name on the short list, because I am firmly focused on my work in the state Senate and representing 167,000 people in western Wisconsin. But we need to continue to talk about jobs and the economy. We are just coming off of this week with a report that we have 20 consecutive quarters of below average job growth here in this state, that we are lagging behind the nation in 20 consecutive quarters. And so what we are doing doesn't appear to be working. We have a shrinking middle class in this state. We need to help lift wages for working families in Wisconsin. And so to really focus in on what we need to do to help grow jobs in this state, to help better our communities, both an urban and a rural agenda is needed, because when I meet with mayors of communities, they're frustrated that they haven't felt an urban emphasis for them. But I meet with rural communities, and they say the last several years have been bruising to us as well. And so I think many of these issues cut across those geographic differences, and it's about good jobs, it's good roads, it's good schools, and it's family-sustaining wages so that we can lift up everybody in this state.
If you run, you'd make a decision and an announcement by when? Tentative timetable?
It's a family decision. It really is. And so we are just not even a week off of the completion of the recount in western Wisconsin for the 32nd seat. And so it's some time with my family to be reflective and look ahead about the challenges and the opportunities that we have ahead in 2017 that I'm facing as the leader of the Senate, and working with my colleagues and my fellow Democrats to really talk about ways that we can build back towards a Democratic majority. But we'll get some time and some space, and we'll make a decision.
And maybe final question, when the governor says he's leaning towards seeking a third term, do you believe he will seek a third term?
I have no reason not to believe him. I haven't heard that he's being tapped for something out in Washington, D.C., although I have continued to think that he was auditioning for something out there even after he pulled up from the presidential race. So I guess time will tell, and nothing should surprise us with this incoming Trump administration.
Thank you. Senate Democratic Leader Jennifer Schilling of La Crosse represents the 32nd District. Happy holidays to you and your family.
Happy holidays. Merry Christmas.
Thank you.